and on the 22nd also, but presumably that's in the evening, Peter Hesler on the evolution of the China story. These are events in coordination with the Hong Kong Literary Festival. And I don't think there's that many seats left, but if you're interested, book very quickly. Now, moving very rapidly on to today's event, very happy to welcome Christina Chan and Mirana Chan, who will are speaking about the post-80s generation. I think it's only fair to say that if there has been a big news topic of the end of last year and the beginning of this year, it most certainly has been that. And we're very fortunate to have Mirana Sito, who I've wrongly introduced, I realise, as Mirana Chan, who has been not only involved in this, she's been the spokesperson for the anti-rail, anti-express rail movement, for the Star Ferry movement, and indeed for the Wheat Link movement. So when you talk about somebody who's an activist, I think that's a reasonable description. Christina Chan is here courtesy of the Hong Kong police, who are currently deciding whether to arrest her or not. But in between that, she's working at on her MPhil at Hong Kong U. And she, of course, I need hardly say, has been much in the news, sometimes in a rather unwanted way, thanks to Oriental Sunday, over the protests. So we'll start with Mirana, then Christina, then questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve, for the introduction. Today, this morning, I was told by the group of young people who call themselves the post-80s and the meditative performance art who organize themselves or call themselves post-80s to say something in the following. And what they actually want me to say is, as they're part of this big alliance for the movement, and I'm the spokesperson of that alliance, right? So to actually remember to invite everybody in the press to please help remember that this is a movement about a much larger issue of sustainable development in Hong Kong and how we could, in terms of participatory democracy, develop the city of the future that we want and that the post-80s generation will inherit. So they want me to say that this is about all of us, across class, across age, across professional and cultural boundaries. And the second issue is that the group has organized themselves in support of residents in Toi Yuen Chun, the village, as well as residents in all the other urban communities that are going to be impacted by all sorts of developments, including urban renewal and the express rail. And they are with these people, right? So they are part of a larger picture. And let's not just focus on them, because they want to represent a younger voice in a larger issue. The second thing would be that in my experience working with people in this movement and comparing it to working with young people in the other movements before, for example, the West Kowloon Cultural District, right, the Link Rate, the Star Ferry and Queen's Pier movement, which created local action, and I'm a member of local action. And what I see this time is all these people from the Reading Cart Street movement are here. Those people from different parts of town in Kwun Tong that is impacted by urban renewal are here. Students who supported the farmers and Choi Yuen Chun are here. Young people who are in green groups for sustainable development, organic farming, and all sorts of environmental issues are here. And also young people who came from the Star Ferry Queen's Pier movement are there. And all sorts of other new people I've never seen before. So in the Star Ferry Queen's Pier movement, the core of volunteers would be in the dozens. And this time, it's in the hundreds. I can't remember the name of everyone. So what we're seeing is an exponential jump in the involvement of young people that are committed, that talk about long-term research, right? That talk people who do research on an issue and not just create a slogan about it. They commit a lot of energy and time. For example, you know, trying to educate the public about the issue by doing this meditative, prostrating walk in the five districts in the city. And they have been with the Choi Yun-shun farmers for over a year. It's a group of people who are not talking about flash mob or a sporadic sudden interest that dies away very easily. You are seeing the emergence of a new generation of young people who are thinking about long-term commitment to change and long-term commitment to making that change in their generation. So I've been told over and over again that the problem must, you know, end with us. We are not going to do what our parents did, to defer democratization to a next generation, to defer a problem to the next batch of officials, to defer dealing with problems that had to be dealt with a long while ago. Right? So what we see is this awakening of a generation that considers this city as their own, and actually being shocked when they actually come in to understand something the first time, being serious about something the first time in their life, that the system that our government is working on and our market is working on, it contains what they call systemic failure. Now, what does that mean? Why is the movement turning against the functional constituencies when we were watching the LegCo meetings live outside the LegCo for the first time in a very massive experience? Was to understand that you could now legally and within procedural limitations do something that is very unjust, that is very imbalanced, right, tilted towards certain lobbying forces in the city, right, against public interest, private property rights overriding public rights, right, and privatization of public resources, and all sorts of other issues, and the bulldozing method of urban renewal against other better planning and better forms of planning, governing, and designing the city. So it's for them, it's a systemic problem. Right? And for example, they think that government officials are not elected, and therefore they do not need to bother about what we think. In a few years' time, they will retire, and then they stay back a few years, and then lo and behold, they become hired as very expensive consultants of large real estate corporations for the rest of their life. Which means, what young people have been fighting for in the 1960s and 80s, for example, anti-corruption, right, that created the ICAC, it's no longer useful because corruption is no longer under the table cash. Corruption is systemic, it's built into the system. Right? And that's why they attack the core constituencies and coalitions of power in the system, the functional constituency and the government. Right? And democratization for them is democratization of what they say in terms of city planning is participatory planning. What does that mean? It's not even enough just to have a vote, which they will fight for, but also to have a say in the entire decision-making process and to have your opinion being integrated into the with impact on decision-making. Right? So what they're asking for is a lot more than what Martin Lee's generation is thinking about. Right? It's that as well, but not enough. So what I'm seeing is it's people doing a second degree after experiencing a movement in order to equip themselves to deal with these problems. And they come back 2 years after the Starfarer movement, totally matured, educated, much better organized. Last time it would be people like me and other more experienced people or social workers helping to do the mobilization and organizing. This time they organized me. I'm recruited into the movement and assigned the job of the spokesperson. Right. So they are telling me what to do, and they come up with the whole strategy and design of the movement comes from these young people. The whole defining discourses of the movement are created by these young people. I'm simply regurgitating. So I'm happily surprised and feel very empowered by this generation of people coming in. And they're not going away. They're not going to be here one day and in a karaoke the next. No, they're coming back. I'm seeing them coming back from one movement to another. And over the years, they've gone to jobs working with perhaps some under some of you. They've learned to understand the media, to try very hard to understand the media, and how, you know, with performance art, with a lot of visual arts, a lot of YouTube clips, a lot of songs, and, you know, all sorts of ways to express and connect to the public out there, to make what they think known to ordinary people out there, and to work with the press, right? In order to build a more in-depth understanding of a public issue. And when that doesn't happen with TVB, they did it outside the latch code, right? Let's all watch live TV together and do good journalistic analysis right there, right? Like you watch a soccer game. So this, you know, they're a generation brought up by media and technology, but they are not obsessed only by the technology. They understand the humanistic meaning behind it, and this group of people connect. They try very hard to connect. Right? And let's help them and educate them. They're very willing to listen. After the movement, after the 16th, after this phase of the movement, there are 11 days of evaluations, and there's 2 retreats coming up, 3-day retreats coming up. So they are dead serious evaluating themselves, learning from each other, debating over issues and tactics, and actually to think of how we're going to work together in such a scale that has never happened before. So they are inventing along the way a way to deal with the movement they've created, and it they surprise themselves. And so these people are going to be there. They're going to be learning. They're going to be working very, very hard. And please, if you have good ideas, tell them. One face group, a group of 2,000-something doing the evaluation and analysis, and another group doing oral history of the movement. So I will take questions later, and I'm going to give the rest of the time to Christina. Thank you.
Your Honor, thank you very much.
Hello. thanks for inviting me. I mean, I'm not a very good speaker, so, you know, forgive me if I bore you. I think Miranda was, I was invited here to talk about why the post-80s generation are so angry. And I think Miranda probably was more qualified to talk about, you know, the post-80s group than I am, because actually I am, you know, biologically, you know, a post-80s person, because I was born after 1980. But I do notice that many people that are born in the same generation don't come out to protest, and a lot of people that do come out to protest aren't born in, you know, born after 1980s. And I do understand that some young people have called themselves post-80s because a lot of Hong Kong people, perhaps from the older generation, have said that young people are really, you know, they don't really care about anything except, you know, singing karaoke, shopping, or anything like that. They don't care about the society. So some young people have labeled themselves as, you know, young people to emphasize the youth elements as one of the many elements in this movement. And I think the unfortunate thing is that the mass media has used it to describe the whole movement as a generation war, and it obviously is not that. As Miranda's mentioned, you have a lot of people from Choyun Village coming out. Sometimes they're 80 years old. You have workers, you know, middle-aged workers coming out to protest, and you know, obviously they're not post-80s. We do also have people like Long Hair saying this is a class struggle, but in the protests, I've seen a lot of people from all classes, you know, rich and all coming out to support the cause, so it isn't that either. And I think the reason why I won't label myself as a post-80s person is because, you know, of course, a person has many identities, and this is one of my identities, but that is not the one driving me out there to protest. And I think if there was a term to describe you know, everyone who's participated in the movement, it isn't, you know, post-80s, it's actually maybe just like self-initiated citizens. Because the difference of this movement from other movements in the past is just that we didn't have, you know, political parties calling us out to join some protests that were already organized. We didn't have some, you know, large NGO kind of, you know, compiled by all the political parties or, you know, political forces in Hong Kong to organize something for us to join within that framework. We actually have people taking, you know, their own self-initiation to organize something for themselves. And a lot of the organizing work was kind of done on the internet. People did stickers on the streets, and it was a much more grassroots movement. So I think that, you know, as the Chinese press always call us, we're kind of self-initiated netizens or citizens or whatever. So I think that the question is actually, you know, why are these self-initiated citizens so angry? And I think the answer lies in the fact that, you know, this time we organized ourselves in such a way that was without the help of, you know, political stars or, you know, big parties. And the reason why we are so angry is, you know, we are angry, of course we are, but are we more angry than before? Maybe we're not. I think maybe we're just finding a different way to express our anger and more creative ways too. In the past, you have a lot of political parties with the best intentions doing things that are much more like, they're much more like media stunts, you know. They go out there with their banners and they shout a few slogans, they get pictures taken of them, they get, you know, a few shots taken of them, they get the sound bites out and they leave, and that's the end of it. And we've seen that done for decades and decades and decades. And, you know, honestly, growing up in Hong Kong, I did see all these things and think, you know, these bring hope to Hong Kong because some people are still speaking up. But I realize now that it's just not enough. We can't just, you know, of course we do use the mass media as a platform, but not always a reliable one to get across our message. But it's about doing things when people from the mass media aren't actually here as well. And when we say we want to do something, we've got to do it. We can't just, you know, see it as a show that we've got to put on. It's like, you know, on New Year's, at the New Year's rally, we said we were going to tie a yellow ribbon on the gate of the China Liaison Office, and we weren't allowed to, you know, we weren't even allowed at the back door of the Liaison Office. We were across the road from it. And on the day, there were three layers of barricades set up, and there were 1,000 police kind of guarding against peaceful citizens, just tying a yellow ribbon, kind of just, you know, exercising our very basic civil liberties to protest peacefully. And when we pushed over those barricades to get to the other side, that was us saying that we're tired of doing political stunts, we're tired of political parties saying that we'll send our, you know, 20 representatives to do this for us. Because, you know, the true democratic spirit is that everybody speaks up for themselves, everybody has the right to express themselves peacefully out there. And I, you know, there are other examples that, you know, you get, there are people that I really respect, but then they, you know, when they go out to protest, they want to hand a letter to an official. And when the official won't come, they hand it to a police officer. But when we go out to protest, we're not, you know, we don't want to hand a blank letter to the police officer. We actually want to get to the official, right? If we don't have democracy, there's no other way of communicating with the authorities. We have to come out to protest, and we actually do want to reach them. So on the day that I think Miranda was also here, on the 29th of November, we did this big rally against the Express Railway, and
we actually, you know, stayed behind, and it wasn't about staying behind, it was about actually waiting for Eva Cheng to actually come and get the letter, and we would have taken, you know, the deal of, you know, them getting a representative of hers to come take the letter, but they wouldn't do it. Such a simple gesture. They wouldn't send a representative to get a letter off us. And so when we stayed and when the police forcibly removed us, you know, obviously when some people were hurt during that process, we were very angry. Of course, we didn't actually do anything physical to retaliate, but of course we were angry and we were shouting slogans saying, you know, the police power is too large and they're, you know, they're abusing their rights. And then people label us as, you know, angry youths and stuff. And, you know, you get people emphasizing, you know, being peaceful and rational, like in Chinese it's just whopping, lay sing, like repeat it over and over again. But I think in this time, we've come to the point that we've actually got to ask ourselves, does being rational necessarily mean being completely peaceful at this age? Because you see, what the government is doing is that, you know, we promised that we would have Hong Kong people ruling Hong Kong people after the handover. We still don't have democracy. Such a simple thing as one person, one vote every 4 years. I mean, that's not even that democratic. We still don't have that. And they, something like the Express Railway, they have half of the legislators in LegCo, these people that are supposed to represent us, half of them are not elected by, you know, the kind of everyday, you know, worker or citizen. Some people get 2 or 3 or 4 votes, and some people only get 1. And, you know, that is complete injustice. And when you have such injustice in the LegCo, when you pass bills that are basically kind of robbing, you know, money off poor people, they're stuffing in the pockets of rich people, and when there's so much kind of protest voices outside, and they will just ignore it completely because, you know, they don't have to listen to it. Everybody kind of answers to their bosses. And when the chief executive, or when these people are elected by, the chief executive is elected by 800 people, or, you know, it'll be 1,200 or 1,600, that's still a fair minority, you know, in the society. And you have these legislative councillors elected by sometimes 100 and something people. I mean, that's less people than, you know, what the student union council and HA unions were elected by. And, you know, that is completely unjust. And what's going on in there is a systematic political violence that's going on. And of course, when the bill actually passes, and when they were actually going to Choyun Village to demolish these people's homes, and when these people defend their homes, they will actually use violence against these people. That's actual physical violence. Outside the LegCo, yeah, peaceful protesters, including myself, there were times when we've actually tried to get across barricades that blocked roads where they have not obtained permits to block. The road should belong to the people when they have no permit to block it. They shouldn't actually be doing it. And when they use force to stop us from exercising our civil liberties, that is violence. And when there was a time when we actually just walked closer to the barricades to see what was going on because there were screaming people there. As soon as we got out there, we were pepper sprayed in the eyes, like right in the eyes. For no reason, we didn't even know what was going on. And the police that got bats inside to hit people when they weren't doing anything. And there's so much physical violence going on by this, and it's all done by this, you know, police forces backing the government. You have political violence and you have physical violence. And when we are basically, you know, facing great violence, if we are rational, do we just not react? Or do we use a very minimal force? Because it is force to get over those barricades. And to, you know, it probably seems immature to everybody here, but we actually tried to get into LegCo, despite the organizer's advice. And we wanted to get into LegCo before the bill was passed, because we had about maybe 20 people, which is myself and 20 other friends. We wanted to get in there, and we hoped that we would have more people following. Of course, the result is that, you know, none of us could even get in because there were so much so many police officers there. But we actually wanted to get in and say, you know, the people are now dissolving this unjust LegCo, this unjust Congress, because it doesn't represent us. And we want to, I mean, at the end of the day, what I'm trying to say is just that we are angry people. We're not just young people. And we've been angry for a long time, and now we've just finally found new ways of
expressing them, and we are actually determined to take that anger and actually do something to change Hong Kong, and we will not just remain silent forever. And if you are not angry, then maybe you should ask yourself, why aren't you angry? That's all for me. Thanks.
I should point out that Christina is writing a PhD in the area of philosophy. That's why you're posed with that particular question. We'll follow the normal format, which is if you could identify yourself, say who the question is directed to, or maybe it's directed to both, just make that clear. Is there anybody who wants to start off?
My name is Paul Surtees. My question is coming in a second, but first I may say, on behalf of many of the other young people in this country, how much you are admired for the standard bearing that you're doing, Christina, and indeed your colleagues in this field. Now, the question is from we of the pre-80s generation, pre-60s in some cases, what can we old fogies do to encourage more participation by young people such as yourself?
I think that, you know, that's a problem of labeling ourselves as post-80s because, you know, you see in the mass media that, you know, all these young people are going out there to protest, but anyone from any generation can also come out to these protests. And, you know, of course there are different things on the side that we could do, you know, publishing articles and, you know, mobilization, all this stuff. But, you know, there are times when we really need a large number of people, and that takes people to, that just takes people to actually just show up. You know, pushing over barricades and stuff like that, not everybody will do that, but I think occasions such as, you know, the 15th or 16th before the bill was passed, we really needed a lot of people to go out there. And I think it's important to know that there are a lot of people that are not, you know, that young out there. And, you know, protesting is not just for young people. I mean, we see people like long hair. He's like 50-something now. He's still out there. You know, so just come out.
Great question. Actually, in the movement, there are a lot of people like you. And they come here to volunteer as ideas, strategies. They're sort of volunteer mentors of some sort. Interestingly, because, for example, people like us who know the LegCo a lot better, we actually have a floor plan of LegCo, and we actually debated for days, Christina, whether we can overtake the pastille. and we give up that idea because we actually architecturally more strategic, right? And that's why we want to ask people to walk around before the police have time to block a sizable stretch of place so that we can reach it really effectively, barricade them in the LegCo. So there were lots and lots of planning and discussion and strategy and tactic behind. And journalist friends helped a lot by, you know, coaching us sometimes. They're coming over before they actually interview us to tell us, you know, how the government would look at this, how major presses would represent this, how you could tell us what you want to tell us in such a way that we can help. And also to teach us how to be better public speakers so we get to be interviewed, we get longer feature articles about it, how to be engaging and informative, to have new things to say and so on. So people like you actually help us to learn, right? And the second thing is donations. My colleagues, Peter Koenig, right, in the history department, full professor, and all these people like them. They have history. They can come and give a talk to our gang, giving us an idea of a history of public space, a history of all these protests, the meanings behind a lot of these things, concepts. You know, give a speech about the history of direct action, for example, and not to look at it as narrowly as just, you know, one moment in a movement. So there are lots of things, you know, architects telling us how to do, an engineer's teaching us how to do alternative plans, teaches us how to do the research, where the secret archives are. The government won't tell you where those documents are. And it's people like you, right, who can contribute to a movement in terms of donating wisdom and expertise, and to show up as much as you can, and if not, donate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, hi, I'm Jess Nielsen. I'm from a Danish newspaper called the Jutland Post. If I could just have your reactions on, or your comments on the question of representation, because Christina mentioned it just now, her and 20 friends wanted to go in and dissolve Letchko. Now, I'm just wondering, if you say the government doesn't represent Hong Kong people, then how can you claim to do so? Thank you.
Obviously, you know, I should also reply that, you know, we didn't just think, oh, we were just bashing Letchko, like, you know, as an irrational decision. The thing is, we did not, you know, unfortunately, we didn't really have good communications with the organizers. We didn't really have those channels, and we didn't know that the organizers planned to block Letchko. And the only thing we thought about, you know, that we could do was to actually go into Letchko and stop the bill, you know, to be passed right then. And, you know, obviously blocking Letchko even would not have stopped the bill. And I think, you know, I really feel sorry for the organizers that, you know, in such a mass movement, I think these days, when the nature of the movements have gotten to this point, when you have so many people coming out with their own minds, with their own wills, things they want to do, sometimes it's hard to, I guess, to obviously control the crowd if you should do that at all. And, you know, we as organizers, of course, I thank the organizers, and I've not really been that much a part of it, but I think as organizers, you know, they really have to think about how, if they can't, obviously, you know, she can't announce on the mic that we're actually going to walk around and then block Letchko, and you know, with that difficulty in mind, how we can cooperate in, you know, in different sorts of direct actions towards the same goal. About whether we represent the people of Hong Kong, of course we, you know, we can't claim to represent the people of Hong Kong at all, but those people in there definitely did not. And our plan was not to take over Letchko and just become legislators ourselves. It was just to dissolve the Letchko, I mean, even temporarily to stop it. I mean, it would be such a huge symbolic meaning for the people to actually take over Letchko. And, you know, we weren't planning on passing bills that weren't actually going to be legally binding or anything like that. But I do think that, first of all, we don't have this, you know, we don't even have this one person, one vote thing. And I think if we do actually have democracy, we're fighting for genuine democracy, not the right to put a piece of paper in a box that's, you know, going to go nowhere every 4 years. We actually need more direct democracy. I do believe in representation, representative democracy, but I think, you know, you can't really have one person representing, you know, 10,000-20,000 people anymore. You really got to have people that are directly connected to the people. People have to be able to speak to their representatives directly. And we should have, you know, we could even have more referendums so we can participate much more directly in decision making.
I think the mathematics of representation is a good question that we need to address. Let me put it this way. There are many ways that we can do claim representation quantitatively and qualitatively. Right? Quantitatively, it is through what we did. We did polling by the Hong Kong U. Right? So what happened is 13% to 16% declared, even by the Bohemia group, they did their own polling. Right? The numbers was between 13% to 16% people say they know about the issue, which means most people don't know about the issue. Now, that talks to us, which means we have to actually let more and more people know about it, and that's our responsibility if the government doesn't do that. But that's why the young people thought of this whole idea of filibuster. Right? And they created the research. They give the legislative councillors over 400 pages of research, 92 questions with rationale why those questions are answered, so that they can help Hong Kong people by asking the questions, help Hong Kong people know what the stakes are and what the key issues are. Right? So that we do, because we know that most people don't know about the issue. But nonetheless, people in the poll said, in our poll, it's consistent. 42 to 45% are against funding it right now,
This is the Express Rail.
Yeah. And 47% said yes. So it's like half-half, right? So we represent actually around half of the people who have an opinion. But interestingly, the Bohemia group, they said over 60% are pro the rail. But at the same time, the number shows only less than 20% of those people who are pro say they know the issue. So a lot of people are saying yes because they don't know. So what I think is, what we are trying to do is to let those people who can't decide know a lot better how you can properly decide on a development of this scale, right? What you really need to know. So I think quantitatively, I think we represent quite a lot of Hong Kong people who are scared, or frustrated and undecided, and they basically do not trust the government and pushing, do not trust the functional constituency to make this decision for them. So, and qualitatively, I have never felt so intensely emotional before when I get back on campus afterwards. How many people who have never talked to me on campus come over, buy me a beer, and tell me what they think. And the kind of aunties and uncles and these people who are writing us emails, who try to contact us, who build Facebook groups in order to get connected with us. And this repercussion tells me qualitatively that I think we have connected to a certain nerve in the city. Thank you.
Well, we're very tight for time, but can I just turn to Francis? If you could maybe just make the answers a bit more brief, we can squeeze another couple in. Francis.
Francis Moriarty, RTHK. It's a double-barreled question for each of you. It is simply this. Do you feel that some of the movement, which you seem to represent in rather different ways, comes about because there's been a failure of the regular media? That's number one. And secondly, where concretely do you think this movement will go from here?
Because we had tons of meetings about the future, so I can answer that first. I think there's going to be, we're going back into the districts, and more and more people in different parts of Hong Kong have realized that they are a victim of this rail. So they are organizing themselves, and we're going in to help and to provide information and so forth. And also to plan ahead in making it a citywide issue. And also to continue our research to show how systematic our system is failing. Right, and to show, you know, politically about the democracy issue, functional constituency, and policy wise in terms of how town planning and development decisions are made, and we're going to be scrutinizing every single detail and letting you know about our results over the time, and to continue to use our artistic and creative ways to let Hong Kong people know as much as possible what other things we can still do. You know, how do we monitor how the money is spent? Are there leeways here and there? For example, talking to the People's Liberation Army about using their place in Shekong instead of Choi Yun-shin. And so there's many possibilities. And also the collapse of the buildings recently. I think a lot of engineers are working on this. There is a construction site going on, and what they could do, Da Zhong, I'm not sure what they do. They're putting in, right next to those buildings. So those two buildings were examined in 2004, and they 2006, and they passed the examination, right? So I think the collapse of those buildings has something to do with construction works nearby, and this is going to happen when the express rail construction happens to these old buildings in Dai Kok Sui. So a lot of these issues has to be followed through. And I invite every one of you to work with us to make people understand these.
Just briefly, I think that, you know, a lot of young people have gone out there because, you know, we read newspapers and watch television reports in Hong Kong, and they do not represent us. They can't report. They don't report things accurately. That is one of the reasons why people have gone out there, because they want a voice for themselves. They think, you know, maybe it's not represented because it's not out there. But then once we get out there, we do realize a lot of a lot of papers can actually just make something up from nothing, and you know they can twist your words. And you on the day, you know, we saw like 10,000 people. Okay, maybe, you know, maybe a bit less, but we saw a lot of people on the side against this express railway bill. And then on the other side, you had people, you know, with the belly dances. You had around 100-200 people, and people, like, you know, stations like TVB have actually said, oh, you know, the people on both sides are kind of the quantities is similar. So the media, of course, is one of the reasons, but it's also the failings of the media, the political parties, as well as the government, the system itself. And where will we go from here? For me, of course, Miranda's working with a very organized group, and I have talked to these people as well about future plans. I think for myself as well as some of my friends, we're actually going to, because we can't deny that this was a failure. We got a lot of people out there, but we failed to stop the bill. We did win something for people's hearts in some ways, but we did fail, and we can't fool ourselves. And the thing is just to not let this failure defeat us completely. But I think for now we just let everything sink in, and we do have to reflect upon how we can go about doing things in the future.
Thank you. We'll take one last question from here. Thank you.
Tim Pearson-Smith. Someone who was probably angry in the 1960s and is probably just infuriated at the moment. It's a question more on tactics and organisation for Marana. You briefly mentioned Facebook. How useful were the sort of social media in terms of orchestrating and planning and organizing and as a call to arms? How useful was that in your organization?
Because it is a mass movement and you can only work as a very intense group, and actually, we have a email group that plan things and meet face to face, and we've watched the film, and we take out the battery and the chip of our telephone when we meet, and we do have very intensive planning strategy meetings for a couple of dozens of people, and then an email group that has turned into two email groups because we became a spam. Replying all. So we have now two parallel groups to organize information. And Facebook is very good for bigger connection with people we don't know that well. So and also Facebook allows us to selectively include on people. Because there are very strange things happening on Facebook, and we have to have an etiquette to that. But it's a good place to put a lot of information, especially the open, public Facebook groups, right? So as one way of providing alternative information that cannot get through mainstream press. Right? And I think... to answer the previous question together with this one, I think media can start to evolve and working with a new form of public dialogue. Maybe your routine way of understanding when to do what could be strategically changing along with this. For example, if you have gotten me on, for example, ATV Newsline before the decision rather than after, it would be making a whole lot of difference. Or to actually give us a lot more space before and let us develop the issue with you, let us make the issue public with you, rather than waiting for the confrontation to happen and then suddenly realize that we have a story. And so I think, you know, being the creator of news, it's a very exciting idea. And I think Facebook created for young people their alternative version of news and information. Thank you.
I'm really sorry to cut off the discussion at this point, but we are well out of time. And I'd like to thank both of our speakers very much indeed. And also to present them. This is a gift from the FCC, and it's waterproof. It may well come in useful. Thank you very much.
another photograph. Sorry. Yeah,
I've never seen the light of day. I've never seen a photograph yet.